Picture the scene. It's a Tuesday afternoon. You're sitting in a conference room, or maybe you're staring at a grid of faces in a Zoom window. Facing you is the Chief Financial Officer and the VP of Sales. You've got your marketing dashboard open on the shared screen. It's colorful, it's well designed. It shows that steady line of growth going up and to the right. You have traffic numbers, you have engagement stats, you even have a specific slide showing average time on page increasing by, 10%. You feel good about the work the content team has done this quarter. You've published 20 articles, launched a podcast, and refreshed the newsletter. Then the finance lead looks at the screen, pauses for a moment that feels like an hour, and asks the question that every content marketer dreads. Okay, this looks great, but what did this actually earn us? And before you answer with brand value, can you tell me if these costs on slide four are accurate, or did you leave out the expensive stuff? And the room goes quiet. You start talking about top of funnel nurture and share of voice, but you can see their eyes glazing over. They don't want to hear about the intangible magic of storytelling. They want to know if the machine is printing more money than it consumes. They're looking for a dollar in, dollar out equation, and you're giving them philosophy. This is the moment where content marketing programs die, not because the content is bad, not because the writing is poor, but because the operational reality of proving value just collapses under scrutiny. Here is the hard truth that we need to confront today. Most teams do not struggle with the math of ROI. The formula for a return on investment is actually incredibly simple. A fifth grader could solve it. It's return minus investment divided by investment. The math is, well, it's trivial. Teams struggle with the operational reality, getting clean inputs, agreeing on definitions, and then defending the numbers against skepticism. The stakes here are incredibly high. If you can't prove ROI with a model that finance respects, content remains a nice-to-have expense. It's viewed as a luxury. And luxuries are the first thing cut when the market turns or when the quarter looks soft. But if you can prove it, if you can build a defensible economic model, content transforms from an expense into a compounding asset. Welcome to the Content Ship Podcast. This is a show about how content actually works today, not how it used to work. We talk about search, AI systems, and the operational side of producing content that survives change. Today, we're unpacking the ops-first playbook for content ROI. We're going to move beyond vanity metrics and look at the hard accounting required to defend your budget. We have a lot of ground to cover, so I want to start by framing the core problem. We need to talk about the credibility crisis. This is the fundamental dysfunction in most organizations, and it's the reason why that meeting with the CFO goes so poorly. The dysfunction, it really stems from a mismatch in language. Leadership, specifically the C-suite, wants pipeline impact. They want to see deals closed. They want to see revenue recognized. The content team, however, usually reports on activity and audience. We report on traffic, likes, shares, and rankings. And the middle ground between these two worlds becomes this messy, emotional debate about attribution. You claim credit for a deal because the prospect read a blog post 6 months ago. Sales claims they would have closed that deal anyway because they're good at their jobs. And finance sits in the middle, trusting neither of you. The solution to this standoff is not a piece of software. It isn't a fancier dashboard with more colors or some new AI attribution tool. It's something called the Ops First Measurement Contract. Now, when I say contract, I don't mean a legal document you sign with a pen. I mean a strategic agreement, a handshake deal between marketing, sales, and finance on the rules of the game. It's an agreement on three specific things that must be defined before you publish a single word. First, define costs, what actually goes into the equation. Second, define return, what counts as value. And third, a fixed time window. When are we actually allowed to judge performance? If you don't have this agreement, you're just throwing numbers at a wall. You're playing a game where the goalposts move every time you have quarterly business review. There's a concept from our research that I think completely changes the game here, and it's crucial for setting this contract up. It's the distinction between measurement and economics. Teams get stuck because they mix these two up constantly. The measurement question is, did the content participate in the journey? This is about attribution mechanics. Did someone read the blog post? Did they click the link? Did they eventually buy? It's a tracking issue. It's a question of digital breadcrumbs. The economic question is entirely different. It asks, was that participation worth the fully loaded cost? You can have perfect measurement, you know exactly who clicked what, and still have terrible economics. You could spend $10,000 to acquire a customer worth $5,000. The measurement is perfect. The economics are bankrupt. Conversely, you can have murky measurement but strong economics if the broader signals are pointing the right way. The insight here is that you have to separate them to defend your model. You need to say to your CFO, here's how we measure participation, and separately, here is the economic model that proves that participation is profitable.
That distinction is the absolute foundation of everything we're going to discuss. If we don't separate measurement from economics, we aren't actually calculating ROI. We're just, you know, listing outcomes and hoping they look impressive enough to secure next year's budget.
Right. Just hope is a strategy. Exactly. So let's look at the first pillar of that contract, defined costs. This is where the math begins, and unfortunately, it's where most marketing leaders accidentally lie to themselves and their stakeholders. The formula for content ROI is standard. It is return minus investment, divided by investment, multiplied by 100.
It's the same formula you'd use for a stock portfolio, a real estate deal, or a factory expansion. The math is not the hard part. The hard part, the trap, is the denominator, the investment.
This is where people get it wrong.
This is where they get it very wrong.
Yeah.
When asked what did this blog post cost, most marketers look at the invoice from the freelancer. It cost $300, they say. Or maybe it cost zero because I wrote it myself.
Which is never true.
Never true. This is false. And finance knows it's false. This is why they roll their eyes during the presentation. To have a defensible ROI model, you must use full cost accounting. This means you have to account for every single resource consumed to bring that asset to life. Let's do a deep dive into this. Let's perform an autopsy on a single piece of content to find the true cost. Imagine you decide to publish a standard, high-quality B2B blog post. Let's say it's 1,500 words on the future of supply chain management. You hire a freelancer. They charge you $300. You put $300 in your spreadsheet under cost.
And you think you're done.
You think you're done.
Yeah.
Now let's look at the reality. First, we have production costs beyond just the writer. Did you need a header image? You probably slacked a graphic designer. Maybe they spent an hour on it. What's their hourly rate? Let's be conservative and say their internal cost is $50 an hour. Now the post costs $350. Did you need a subject matter expert? Maybe you interviewed an internal engineer to get the technical details right. That interview lasted 45 minutes. That engineer is expensive. Let's say their internal allocation rate is $100 an hour. Add another $75 to the pile, we're at $425.
Already creeping up. And now we move to the second category, internal labor allocation. This is the one that's most often missed, and it's usually the most expensive.
That draft didn't just magically appear on your website. You, the content marketing manager, you spent an hour creating the brief. You spent another hour reviewing the outline. When the draft came in, you spent 2 hours editing it, formatting it, and staging it in the CMS. If your fully loaded hourly cost is, say, $60, you just added $240 to the bill.
Wow.
We're now at $665. We have already more than doubled the cost of the freelancer.
And we're not even done, are we?
Not even close. We have to talk about the approval tax. This is the silent killer of ROI. Let's say this blog post touches on a sensitive product feature or a regulated topic. Now the product marketing manager needs to review it. Then, because you mentioned a specific compliance standard, the legal team or a VP needs to look at it.
Oh, I can feel the cost going up just hearing you say that.
Right. Think about the mechanics of that review. It usually happens in a Google Doc. There are comments. There are revisions. There's a meeting to discuss the revisions. If a product director and a compliance officer each spend 1 hour reviewing and debating this post, you are adding high-level executive salary to the cost basis. That could easily be another $300 or $400 in internal resource allocation.
So that $300 blog post is now what? Over $1,000?
Easily over $1,000. And why does this matter? Because if you calculate your ROI based on a $300 cost, you might think you have a 500% return. But if the real cost is $1,000, your ROI might be zero or even negative. If you present that fantasy number to a CFO, they will destroy you. They know the lights stay on, the software gets paid for, and the salaries get paid somehow. If you don't account for that overhead, you just look naive.
Then there's more that goes into the cost, right? It's not just labor.
Absolutely. There are two other categories we have to add to this denominator. Third is tooling. Content doesn't happen in a vacuum. You pay for SEO subscriptions like Ahrefs or SEMrush to find the keywords. You pay for Asana or Monday.com to manage the workflow. You pay for the hosting. You might have subscriptions to large language models like ChatGPT or Jasper.
Things you just take for granted.
Exactly. You can't just ignore these costs. You have to amortize them. If your tech stack costs $2,000 a month and you produce 10 pieces of content, every single piece starts with a $200 debt. Fourth is distribution. Content is not an asset until it is seen. This includes paid boosts on LinkedIn, newsletter software fees, and syndication costs. If you spend $50 to boost the post, that goes straight into the iInvestment.
And these costs aren't always the same, I imagine.
No, and that's a key point. We also have to talk about operational variability. Costs are not static. Sometimes you're in a scaling phase. You might use remote content writer jobs boards to find cheaper contractors to pump out volume for a glossary project. In that case, your production cost drops, but your editing and management costs might skyrocket because the quality is lower and requires more internal fixing.
Right, you're trading one cost for another.
Precisely. Other times, you're relying on expensive, senior in-house talent. The quality is high, so editing time is low, but the base salary cost is massive. Mm-hmm. Your model has to capture this fluctuation. You can't use a flat average cost forever. You need to update your assumptions quarterly. The takeaway here is stark. A blog post is rarely cheap once you add in the project management overhead and the 3 weeks it sat in approval limbo. If you only count the writer's fee, you are artificially inflating your ROI. You might feel good about the number, but you are building your strategy on a fantasy. When finance drills down, that house of cards collapses. You have to embrace the pain of full cost accounting. Yes, it makes your ROI look lower initially, but it makes your numbers real. And in business, real numbers are the only ones that save your job.
That is a sobering breakdown. I think everyone listening just mentally added up the cost of their last blog post and probably shuddered a little bit. But you're right. If the cost is wrong, the ROI is a lie. So we've established the cost. We know how to calculate the investment without lying to ourselves. Now let's look at the other side of the equation, the return. This is step two of the ops first measurement contract. And frankly, this is where the fights happen. The biggest trap in defining return is what we call the last touch trap. This is the tendency to only give credit to the very last thing a prospect clicked before they handed over their credit card or signed the contract.
Which is just a disaster for B2B.
It's a disaster. In B2B marketing or any complex sale involving a long decision cycle, it's intellectual dishonesty. I like to use a sports analogy here. It's like watching a basketball game and saying the only player who contributed to the score is the one who took the final shot. You ignore the rebound. You ignore the screen that freed them up. You ignore the pass. The assist.
The assist. That's the key word.
Content operates as a sequence of assists. Think about the user journey. First, there's a blog post that explains the problem the user is facing. They read it, realize they have an issue, and they leave. 2 weeks later, they come back and read a comparison piece that removes their doubt about potential solutions. Finally, they download an implementation guide that lowers the perceived risk of coaching vendors. Then, and only then, do they click Talk to Sales. If you only credit the Talk to Sales button or the ad they clicked right before it, you've decided that all that previous content was worthless. But here's the catch. If you turn that content off, the sales stop happening.
The assist disappears and the shooter never gets open.
Exactly. So how do you report this to a skeptical CFO who hates fluffy numbers? You don't try to find one perfect number. You use a tiered solution. You present three tiers of return side by side. Tier one is the conservative number. This is closed won revenue directly connected to tracked opportunities. This is the least controversial metric. The story is simple. They read this article. They immediately clicked demo. They bought.
It's rare, but it's irrefutable.
It is rare. It might only happen 5% of the time, but it's real cash. Irrefutable. Tier two is the influence number. This is influenced pipeline. This tracks where content appeared anywhere in a multi-touch path. Maybe they read the blog 3 months ago and then came back via a Google ad. The ad got the last click, but the blog influenced the journey.
And this number is always going to be much bigger. It shows the ecosystem.
Much bigger. It shows the ecosystem effect. And then tier three is the proxy number. This is usually lead value. For example, if you generate 100 marketing qualified leads, or MQLs, and you know historically that leads convert at 5% and are worth $10,000, you can assign a proxy value to those leads. Now, I want to be very clear about how you present this. There's a danger here. If you walk into a boardroom and lead with tier three, if you say, we created $1 million in proxy value, the CFO is going to laugh at you.
You can't pay the bills with proxy value.
You can't pay the server bill with proxy value. You cannot pay salaries with MQLs. The genius of the tiered approach is psychological. It stops the argument before it starts by validating their skepticism. When you present tier one, the CFO nods. They see the safe revenue. It proves you aren't making things up. You're showing them the cash receipts. Then you show tier two and tier three, which acknowledge the broader reality of how marketing works. You say, here's what we can prove with a direct receipt, tier one, and here's the total ecosystem value, tier two and three, that predicts our future growth. This framing allows executives to accept the model. They get the conservative floor they need for safety and the ambitious ceiling you need to justify growth. It changes the conversation from, is this true too? How do we get more of tier one and tier two? If you're finding this deep dive into content operations useful, take a second to follow or subscribe to the show. It helps us keep unpacking these complex topics and moving beyond the basics. Now that we've defined cost, the investment, and return, the tiered value, we have to address the third element of the contract, the time window. This is a big one.
This is where the operational discipline really gets tested. This is where most strategies get killed prematurely. You have to understand the fundamental difference between rent and own. With a paid ad PPC or social, you are renting attention. You put a dollar in and you see the result almost immediately. It's a faucet. You turn it on, water flows. You turn it off, the water stops instantly. The measurement window is short, usually days or weeks.
But content isn't like that.
Content is not rent. Content is ownership. It's agricultural. You plant the seed, you water it, you weed the garden, and the harvest comes later. The problem arises when organizations try to report on content using a paid media cadence. If you report on ROI weekly, you are going to punish your best long-term assets and reward short-term noise.
Can you give an example of that?
Sure. Let's look at a scenario. You write a viral post about a trending topic in your industry. It spikes traffic this week. It looks like a huge success on the dashboard. But next week, it's gone. And when you look at the quality, it brought in zero qualified leads because it was just news.
Empty calories.
Empty calories. Meanwhile, you write a boring, high-value guide on enterprise implementation protocols. It gets 10 views this week. The ROI looks terrible. But those 10 views were from decision makers. And over the next year, that guide will continue to get 10 views a week, every week, from high-intent buyers.
So if you judge too soon, you make the wrong call.
You make exactly the wrong call. If you measure on a weekly basis, you kill the implementation guide because it looks slow, and you double down on the viral fluff because it looks fast. You end up with a blog full of noise and an empty pipeline. The solution is to agree on a statute of limitations, a measurement window you need to tell leadership. We are going to judge the success of this asset over this specific time frame.
And what should that time frame be?
Based on the data, here are the benchmarks you should be looking at for B2B. For early traction, things like assisted conversions and lead quality signals, you're looking at a 3 to 6 month window. For consistent payback, specifically from organic search SEO rankings, you're looking at 6 to 12 months.
6 to 12 months. That requires patience. It does. And this brings us to a fundamental concept. Content as a compounding asset versus a recurring expense.
If you treat content as an expense, like a billboard rental, you expect it to disappear. But if you treat it as an asset, it continues to pay you back after the initial spend.
This is the magic part.
This is the magic of the ops first model.
Right.
Once you pay the full cost we discussed earlier, the $1,000 for the writer, the editor, the compliance review, that cost is done. It is sunk. It does not recur.
Yeah.
But the asset remains on your site. In year one, maybe it generates $1,000 in value. You've broken even. In year two, you spend zero on production, but the asset is still there. It's earned backlinks. It's gained domain authority. It generates another $1,000 in value.
And in year three, another $1,000.
And on and on. The ROI of a paid ad stays flat. You spend $10, you get $15. To get another $15, you must spend another $10. The margin never improves. The ROI of a content asset should go up over time. The denominator, investment, stays the same, but the numerator, return, grows indefinitely. The strategic implication here is massive. Operational discipline means holding your nerve. It means staring at a spreadsheet in month two, seeing a negative ROI, and not killing the strategy. It means trusting the time window you agreed to in the contract.
I love that distinction between asset and expense. It really reframes the entire budget conversation. It moves us from spending money to building a library of assets.
Exactly.
But while we are waiting for that long-term ROI to mature, while we're waiting for that 12-month window, we need to know if we're on the right track. We can't just fly blind for 6 months and hope the harvest comes in.
Right. You need leading indicators.
This is where diagnostic metrics come in. We need to separate headline metrics from diagnostic metrics. ROI is the headline number. It's the final score of the game. Metrics are the diagnosis, the blood work that tells you if the patient is healthy enough to win the game. We need to walk through the four categories of metrics and look at what they really tell you, because it's usually not what the dashboard says. First, let's look at traffic. This is a measure of demand capture. The question to ask here is, are you earning demand or are you renting it? Organic visitors are the clearest indicator that you're earning demand. But there's a warning here. It is very easy to inflate traffic with irrelevant viral topics.
The empty calories again.
The empty calories. If you write a post about the best Super Bowl commercials, you might get 10,000 hits. The line on the chart goes up. Everyone claps. But if you sell enterprise cloud storage, those hits are worthless. They are pollution in your data. So you must pair traffic with intent signals. Which pages are bringing in first visits? And do those people stay? This leads to the second category, engagement. We need to reframe metrics like time on page and bounce rate. These are often dismissed as vanity metrics, but in an ops-first model, they're quality assurance signals. They tell you if your production process is working.
So they're not for vanity, they're for diagnosis.
Exactly. Think about it. If a high-intent user searches for a solution, sees your link, clicks it, and then bounces immediately within 5 seconds, what happened? You have a promise mismatch. Your headline promised a solution, but your page delivered fluff. Or maybe your site took 8 seconds to load, or maybe the formatting was unreadable on mobile. That bounce isn't just a number, it's a symptom of broken product. It tells you to go back and fix the asset.
And what about backlinks?
On the flip side, correcting backlinks is crucial here. A backlink is a vote of confidence from the internet. It's the signal that explains why a page wins without spend. If you are getting traffic but no backlinks, your content might be clickbaity. If you are getting backlinks, you are building authority. Third, conversions. This is about action. For the ROI model, we have to be ruthless. We focus on conversions that map to opportunity creation, demo requests, trial starts, contact sales forms.
The things that lead to money.
The things that lead directly to money. What about email signups and lead magnets? These are tricky. You should only count them if you have a defined lifecycle stage for them. If someone downloads a white paper and just sits in your database forever, receiving a newsletter they never open, that is not a return. That is data hoarding. It costs you money to host that record. You need to differentiate between subscribers, an audience, and leads, potential revenue. Finally, the fourth category, revenue. This is the CFO layer. Here we look at CAC from content, customer acquisition cost. This is simply total investment divided by customers acquired with a content touch. We also look at pipeline influence. This is the big one. This shows where content reduces the need for paid spend. If you can show that customers who read your blog close 20% faster than those who don't, or that they require 30% less paid retargeting to convert, you've proven the economic value of your work. You are making the sales team more efficient.
We've covered the theory, the math, and the metrics. Now let's talk about the tools and the operations. How do you actually build this machine?
The practical stuff.
For practical stuff, there's a huge misconception that to measure ROI effectively, you need an expensive AI-powered magical software stack. You need a $50,000 attribution platform. The truth is, you don't. You need boring consistency. A reliable ROI system is built on a boring tool chain that is used correctly.
I like that. Boring consistency.
It's not sexy, but it works. You need three core pieces of technology. First, you need GA4, Google Analytics 4. This is for behavioral signals. The key here is not just watching page views. You need to configure specific events for form submissions. You need to know exactly when a user crosses the threshold from reader to lead. If you haven't set up key events in GA4, you are flying blind. Second, you need UTMs. This is non-negotiable, and this is where most teams fail. You should be using the Google Campaign URL Builder or a spreadsheet generator. Every single link you put in an email, every link in a social post, every link in a partner newsletter, it must be tagged.
Why is that so critical? Because without UTMs, traffic shows up as direct or referral, and you lose the story. You cannot calculate ROI if you don't know where the user came from. But here's the catch. You need a taxonomy governance document. A rule book.
A rule book. If one person on your team types LinkedIn, lowercase, as the source, and another person types LinkedIn, capitalized, and a third person types Sociali, GA4 sees those as three different sources. Your data is fragmented. Standardizing this, making sure everyone types LinkedIn organic the exact same way, is an operational superpower. It sounds boring, but it is the difference between clean data and garbage. Third, you need a CRM or marketing automation platform. This is the bridge. This connects the on-site behavior, the click, to the pipeline, the money. Whether it's HubSpot, Salesforce, or Marketo, you need attribution reporting that can look back and say, this closed deal started with that blog post 6 months ago. You need to ensure that the first touch source and last touch source fields are actually being populated.
Okay, so let's get practical. Let's say you're listening to this and you want to fix your ROI this quarter. You don't have budget for new tools. You don't have budget for more writers. How do you do it?
I've got three quick wins that can improve ROI without forcing you to work more hours.
Let's hear them. Quick win number one, the audit. Most audits are useless because they just look for performance. You want to look for refresh candidates. Use this triage rule. Look for pages that have good impressions so people are seeing them in search, and a clear persona fit, but a broken conversion path or low click-through rate. So they're almost winning.
They're almost winning. Maybe the information is outdated. It says 2023 in the title. Maybe the call to action is buried at the bottom. These pages are gold mines. Run a checklist. Update the facts and screenshots. Fix the intro to match the search intent. Make sure you answer the user's question immediately. Add one proof element, a diagram, a quote, or a data point that makes the piece look authoritative. If you do this to your top 20 underperforming pages, you will see an ROI lift faster than if you wrote 20 new posts. You're capitalizing on sunk costs.
I love that. Quick win number two.
Repurposing. But stop acting like a social scheduler and start acting like an operator. Most teams just copy-paste a blog link into LinkedIn with a caption that says, "Check out our new post." That is lazy distribution. It gets zero engagement. Instead, have a content strategist define the job of the new asset. If you have a 2,000-word guide, don't just link to it. Have an SEO writer reshape it into a LinkedIn carousel that stands alone. Turn the header graphic into an Instagram story. Turn the key argument into a newsletter segment.
So each piece does a different job.
Exactly. The goal isn't just more posts. The goal is more touches that share the same investment cost. If you spend $1,000 on a core idea, you want that idea to live in five places, lowering the cost per channel.
Okay, and number three, quick win number three, tighten distribution. Look at your channel data. You will likely find channels that look busy, lots of likes, lots of noise, but create zero pipeline.
Maybe you're spending 5 hours a week on Twitter X, but it hasn't generated a lead in 6 months. Cut it.
Be ruthless.
Be ruthless. Pick fewer channels, but track them perfectly. If you stop posting on the channels that don't pay you back, you free up time to double down on the ones that do. That immediately improves your efficiency metrics.
We have covered a lot of ground today. We started with a panic-inducing meeting with finance and moved all the way through to a tactical audit checklist. Let's summarize the journey, because this is a fundamental shift in mindset. We moved from viewing content ROI as a math problem to viewing it as an operations problem.
That's the core of it. Here are the key takeaways you need to remember. Number one, full cost accounting. Stop lying about how much content costs. If you want to be credible, you must include the meetings, the tools, the management overhead, and the distribution costs.
If you don't count the inputs, you can't claim the output. It is better to have a high cost and a real ROI than a fake low cost and zero credibility.
Mm-hmm.
Tiered returns. Don't bet everything on a single number. Report tier one revenue, tier two influence, and tier three proxy value side by side. Give finance the safety they need and marketing the credit they deserve for the full journey.
Fixed windows. Content is an asset, not an expense. Don't judge a six-month asset on a three-week time frame. Agree on the window before you start planting the seeds. And number four, governance. The messy workflow is the enemy of ROI. If you don't know what you published or why, you can't measure it. Use UTMs, standardize your data, and audit your existing library before you build new stuff.
This brings us to a final reflection. The biggest barrier to ROI isn't the algorithm or the market or even the budget. It's the internal chaos.
That's so true.
When you standardize this process, when you have governed workflows, standard personas, and clear definitions, the noise disappears. You stop having to reconstruct context from old Slack threads to figure out why you wrote something. You stop debating whether a blog post was a success based on feelings. You have a contract. You have a model. And you have the confidence to look that CFO in the eye and say, this is exactly what we earned, and here is exactly how we did it. To learn more about governed content workflows, visit www.contentship.io. You can subscribe there for future deep dives into the operational side of content. Thanks for listening.